Beetroot juice, used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, caused waves at the last Olympics. Clinical studies proved 2 glasses of beetroot juice per day could increase stamina by 16%. I've been using it, and this product is excellent. Beets are a nutrition goldmine, so call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. Get a 30-day supply free. That's 800-738-2198 or intelligentbeets.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking to Jim Laval, America's wellness expert. He is a pharmacologist and board-certified clinical nutritionist, and he is also author of Breaking the Metabolic Code, a great book on how you can turn things around. And we're talking about turning things around when it comes to an epidemic that threatens America. It's the tsunami of diabetes and pre-diabetes. Jim, how can someone know whether they're at risk or whether they may already have pre-diabetes? I mean, diabetes, okay, you go to the doctor and if your blood sugar is way out of control, they're pretty good. They'll identify that. But how do you know that you have a pre-diabetic condition?
You know what? That's a great question. And what I tell people is a couple things. Is first of all, look down at your belly, and do you have weight around your waist? And if you're putting on and accumulating weight around your waist, and you're having trouble figuring out why, that could be that you are pre-diabetic. You're putting on central fat. Another thing you could do, you could do your pH. It sounds really simple, but people understand pH strips. And I always tell people when your pH is acidic in your saliva, typically that means you're short in minerals, especially minerals like magnesium. And if you're low in minerals like magnesium and your belly's getting bigger, that's 2 strikes against you. Third one, what about blood pressure? You know, a lot of people don't realize there's a lot of people walking around. 1 in 3 people walking around outside today are hypertensive. And so you should really look at your blood pressure, because if your blood pressure is starting to go up, when your blood glucose goes up and you're making more insulin, that's that term called insulin resistance, you make more adrenaline. And the adrenaline, which you think, oh, I'm not fighting a white tiger, but your body's response to too much insulin is you also make too much adrenaline. And now your blood vessels start to get tighter, less pliable, they constrict, and now your body's got to work harder to get that blood through things like your kidneys. And so the blood pressure goes up. The easiest thing you can do, Kaiser Permanente did a study, 47,563 lives. Right, over 10 years, and everybody in the study had normal blood glucoses. They tracked people over 10 years until either they developed diabetes, died, or left the study, one of the three. Mm-hmm. And what the net of it was, for every point, this is a real simple, down and dirty way to do it, for every point over 84, it represented a 6% risk of being a person with diabetes in the next decade.
So you're talking fasting blood sugar.
Fasting blood sugar in the morning, take your blood sugar, and if you, you know this, right? People end up with 94 fasting blood sugars in the morning, and that's in the normal range. So you know what they get? Maybe they're 30 pounds overweight too, maybe they got a little bit of hypertension. The doctor slaps them on the back and says, you better start exercising and eating right.
Whatever that means.
The reality is, whatever that is.
Yeah, right. That's kind of like a quick. Seriously, that's like, and head for the exit, you know, we're done.
Yeah, exactly.
Visit over.
So it's exactly it. Yeah, here's a pill. Here, take some metformin, and by the way, here's a statin. But the point being is that when you're at 94, you already have a 54% risk of being a person mm-hmm. with diabetes in the next decade, and you already have vascular damage taking place, so damage to the brain, damage to the kidneys, damage to the lining of the heart, the endothelium, and the vascular network is already being damaged. So a good thing I tell people is, you know what, take your blood, get a glucometer. They're cheap. Buy a glucometer, find a friend that's a diabetic. There's enough of them around. Get a fasting blood sugar. Stick your finger, take a look. See what it is. Go to your doc. Go to a health fair. Get your number. And I got to tell you, this is what's crazy about this. I go and teach doctors, very regularly, and I don't know what it is about diabetes. But, my grandmother was a fingerless, toeless, blind, met us, ended up type 1 diabetic. But she, it was tough being around her and seeing what happened with diabetes.
Yeah.
You know, my father's diabetic. I mean, I've lived this life. People are afraid of their blood sugars. I'll go into a medical conference and I'll say, how many doctors in the room know their blood sugar? Raise your hand. And 9 out of 10 docs will not even know their own blood sugar. We're afraid of this disease, and this is the one disease. Cancer, it's really hard for you to unwind that. Just like what Ralph Moss did, he took action. He lost 40 pounds. He normalized his blood sugar, and now he's out of harm's way. So for me, it's get your numbers. Know your glucose. Yes, you can get a hemoglobin A1C too. That's a little more advanced for an average person, but if they could go to their doctor, get a hemoglobin A1C, and find out what their long-term glucose control is, that's good. And then there's some more sophisticated ones too.
Glucose tolerance test with insulin, which is something I do. That's more of a specialty thing.
Insulin, all that stuff. Fructosamine, all that good stuff. But the reality is, I'll have people eat, and then an hour later, say, eat your normal meal. And an hour after you eat, I want you to take your blood sugar.
Yep.
If your blood sugar is up over 140 one hour after you eat,
that's very good.
You either reacted to something or you ate too many starches.
Mm-hmm.
Real
yep.
easy.
Yeah. It's a simple challenge. You don't even have to drink a sugar solution. Okay, so let's...
Yeah, which does that, right? I mean, that's what gets me about when we do the challenges is that we got people drinking sugar solutions, but what they're really doing is they're just eating too much stinking food. Let's just say, hey, we're gonna test you after lunch.
Right. Easy. So let's focus on specific nutrients that you might suggest for turning this around. You mentioned in part one magnesium is a crucial nutrient, but there are others, I'm sure, right?
Right. I mean, I think there's several. I mentioned white kidney bean extract. There's a branded raw material named that called Phase 2. That's the one that's got all the studies behind it. So as you all know, Phase 2 white kidney bean extract. Then chromium. I mean, the studies on chromium are very clear. The problem is that when you go and buy a product that says blood sugar control or ultra blood sugar metabolism, whatever, they put about a tenth of the chromium that's needed for you to really get successful at managing your blood sugar. So if you look at all the studies on chromium, they range in 1,000 micrograms to 2,000 micrograms a day.
Yep.
And what people see in these blood sugar support formulas are 200 micrograms, so they get one-fifth to one-tenth of what they should get. And so getting enough chromium is incredibly important. Our modern diet doesn't supply enough of it, and then when you eat a lot of starch, you tend to use more chromium up out of your body pool. So I find people tend to be really low on that. I think that zinc is really important, and zinc is a part of the insulin receptor complex, meaning that it helps your insulin receptors to work more effectively. So zinc, chromium, magnesium. Then vitamin B cofactors. You need vitamin B1. And if you want to get fancy, you could use a methylated B vitamin. So you can use something like benfotiamine, which means your body doesn't have to take the vitamin B1 or thiamine and break it down. It's already available to be used as is. But B vitamins are important because they help participate in the generation of energy, which means you're going to burn fuel, you're going to get rid of that glucose, you're not going to store fat. So the Bs, you know, B1, B2, B3, B5, everybody forgets about pantothenic acid, B5, B6, B12, and folate, get a good B vitamin in because it's really helping with energy reactions in your body. I'll tell you the other one that's important is, vitamin C, just to clean up the free radical damage from having too high a blood sugar for a long time. Now, there's a marker in your blood called deoxyguanosine, and it's a marker for DNA damage, actually. How much free radical is in your bloodstream.
It's a DNA adduct. It's something that's like damaged DNA, right?
Exactly. And when you take vitamin C, you clean up, you mop up, you sponge up that DNA adduct, that marker for damaged DNA. So you're just sponging that stuff up, getting it under control. And I think that's important. And then you can start getting into some more elegant things. Alpha-lipoic acid, really interesting for people with diabetic neuropathy, but what they also found out was it helps insulin receptors to begin to open up and become more effective again. And so it creates something known as insulin receptor sensitization. So the receptor tends to be better it opening and accepting that insulin and saying, yep, we're going to take that glucose and march it through the right gate so we can make more energy versus less energy. So I like ALA a lot. And then there's some other interesting things from the plant world. You know, bitter melon has some great studies. In fact, in Europe, 15% bitter melon extract is prescribed by physicians for early diabetes and insulin resistance because it lowers hemoglobin A1C as much as a half a point.
That's sometimes the botanicals like Mamortica or something along those lines, right?
It is Mamortica. That's exactly what it is. That is Mamortica or bitter melon extract. And so there's very good data on bitter melon extract internationally, both in India and in Europe, especially in Germany. And then, you know, other agents, there's one agent, you know, fenugreek in higher doses, okay. Cinnamon extracts, so there's standardized cinnamon extracts that have got some nice data on them in humans where you can, you know, get those in a, you know, pill form, you know, 250 milligrams a couple times a day. But what I would tell everybody, where do you start? Because we haven't talked about stress yet. I want to make sure we can touch on stress. And thyroid and sex hormones. I'll try to talk fast. But the reality is, where do you start? Get the minerals in. Get the vitamins in. You know, fish oil actually helps as well with helping the insulin receptor to modulate. And what they found in people with diabetes that were low in omega-3 fatty acids is that their vascular, their microcapillaries were much smaller. And when they gave them fish oil, the microcapillaries literally doubled in size. So I think these are really important concepts to get your base nutrition down, try to improve your eating, use something to control your carbs like phase two, and then think about adding the botanicals in if you're not successful. And then there's the other thing. See, like you said, the other hormones that aren't insulin that regulate what's going on. You know, thyroid hormone, for example, what people don't realize is 20% of your insulin receptors will retract. They'll go into the cell and not be utilized if you don't have enough thyroid hormone.
Hmm. We certainly see that sometimes, especially women at the time of menopause, they get a little insulin resistant, they get a little hypothyroid, they start gaining weight, the blood sugar is going up. We call this syndrome W in women. It's like a triple whammy where it's like a metabolic logjam.
Metabolic nightmare.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It is, though, because what you just described is what leads into breast cancer, right? There's that clear association of autoimmune thyroiditis, insulin resistance, that's going on in that woman as she's in perimenopause or menopause, and it's because at the cellular level, the cell is getting very inefficient at generating energy, and therefore they make a lot of waste products. You make a lot of lactic acid, and that lactic acid has to get pumped out of your cell. And if it can't get pumped out of the cell goes, well, heck, I don't want to die. I'm going to turn on this switch called hypoxia-inducible factor, meaning I can live in a hypoxic state, lactic acid, and that generates that immortal cell, right? That's the big switch flip that occurs. And so it goes, hey, we don't need oxygen anymore to live. We just need glucose. And if you don't, and once again, we know this, but that's how they diagnose people with cancer. They give them sugar water, and they do a scan.
It's called the PET scan. The PET scan, yeah.
Exactly. It's a PET scan, and what it does is it lights up where the cancer cells are, because the cancer cells suck up that glucose about 50 times faster than a normal cell.
Mm-hmm. That's a great visual, because this helps people understand that relationship. Okay, so for men, we see testosterone playing a role. I often see men who are, chubby, they're demotivated, they don't want to exercise, they're lethargic, they can't have sex, and they're diabetic. And giving them a little testosterone sometimes gets them jump-started, and they get in a healthier program, and they lose some of that belly fat.
Well, I think testosterone is super important to a lot of especially middle-aged men, because once they start getting erectile dysfunction and they can't have sex, I mean, we know they've got problems vascularly. That means they're going to have heart disease in the next 5 years, right? So a lot of men don't realize that. And the other thing I try to get across to men is if your testosterone's low and nobody's looked at the stress hormone cortisol in you, a lot of these men are under high tension, high stress. The work stress is high, the family stress is high, and they feel like they're fighting a white tiger the whole time. When your cortisol goes up, it reduces your luteinizing hormone, which is what triggers you to make testosterone. So testosterone goes down, and at the same time your growth hormone goes down.
Yep.
And so I really encourage men to try to maintain a healthy testosterone as they're aging. But if their cortisol levels are high, I also want them to manage their cortisol. So whether we get them in behavioral therapies or stress reduction, yeah, or give them something to dampen their stress response, like magnolia and philodendron or holy basil or theanine, something that will dampen a stress situation that they can't get out of, high-pressure job, right? Can't go away from that, got to pay the bills.
Yep.
But you got to dampen that stress response. And so I think it's this triad. What I see, I teach this when I'm trying to help doctors model what they're looking at, is it's the relationship between stress, insulin resistance, and testosterone. Because you nailed it. When their testosterone goes down, their insulin receptors don't work as well. They get a lot fatter. They get more demotivated. They certainly don't think as clearly. And I call it the whatever. Right? It's the whatever. You ask the guy, how's he doing? Ah, whatever. Yeah, right. What's your wife think you should do? Ah, whatever, right? You know, so it's
like the biology, I call it the biology of defeat. You know, it's like
yeah,
game over.
Exactly. You know, but I mean, really, it's really tough, because what we want to try to do is explain these things so people feel that we want them to understand it easily. And we're talking about very complex relationships between stress hormones, sex hormones, insulin, thyroid hormone, and then we layer on top of it environmental burden, mineral deficiencies, not getting enough sleep, right? I mean, just something that simple as not getting enough sleep.
Oh, yeah, that's a biggie.
Alters your blood sugar.
Yeah, explain
right?
that, because I mean, that's huge. You know, this is something that we've only recently come to understand, is that people who don't get enough sleep, or they have sleep apnea, they're at much higher risk for diabetes and weight gain. What's up with that?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, when I first was aware of it was the NHANES-1 data, and you know, the NHANES-1 data showed that if you sleep 5 hours a night, if you just sleep good 5 hours a night, that's it, you're 73% more likely to become obese and potentially be diabetic.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of people walking around between 5 and 6 hours a night sleep. Nobody's getting 7 to 9 hours of restful sleep anymore. It's very difficult, and we work really hard at getting people to do that. But basically, it's this. When you don't sleep enough, your brain needs nutrients to keep it functioning. So the natural physiologic response is raise cortisol. When cortisol goes up, and sleep disorder is known as a hyperarousal disorder, other than apnea, which is oxygen deprivation. But if it's for the sleep side, where I'm hyperaroused, that means more cortisol. More cortisol means insulin resistance, right? Because the cortisol tells your insulin receptors not to work so hard. And then cortisol tells your body to raise your blood sugar, because you have to fight a white tiger. And when you're not sleeping enough, your brain has to stay conscious longer, so your baseline glucose goes up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that's the problem. And people think they're going to, you know, it's one of the biggest things on weight loss that we teach people here, or I should say fat loss. It's we got to get you to sleep. If you can't sleep 7 to 9 hours restfully, we're going to have an uphill battle.
It sounds counterintuitive, because you think, well, you know, I'm just sleeping. I should be, you know, getting up earlier to exercise more or run around. But actually, you need that sleep to literally to burn fat. So that's interesting. To round out this fact-filled discussion about many, because we're really throwing a lot of ideas and facts at our listeners, we got to give a nod to something that's very important in diabetes management, which is, of course, exercise. So, where do you situate that within the constellation of things that we do?
Well, I just think I need to get people to move more. You know, I mean, you know, we're all buying Fitbits and body bugs and who knows what else to attach to ourselves, but the reality is, people aren't moving enough. We need movement in order to stimulate metabolism. There's a fine line, though, between exercising enough and exercising too much. Mm-hmm. I've worked with a lot of athletes, especially endurance athletes, that end up with fasting sugars in the 90s and hemoglobin A1Cs of 5.8, mm-hmm. you know, approaching 6. And that's because when you train a lot, if you're not eating appropriately and getting enough sleep, your blood sugar also goes up, because you're stimulating more cortisol production.
Yeah,
so the rule of thumb I give people is this: 30 minutes to an hour, no more than an hour of exercise. Keep your heart rate below 75% of your age appropriate max. try to combine some resistance training with a little bit of aerobics. I know a lot of people are big into the, hey, we're going to do HIIT training or interval training. Yep. I love that stuff, but I also find that some of my people just need 20 minutes of a moderate brisk walk, and that does a lot for them. In addition to the need for resistance training in order to build bone density, I got it. Right. That's my fast rules of thumb that I give people. Look, I want you to train 30 to 45 minutes. I want to keep your heart rate under 70, so between 50% and 70% of max. You know, lift some weights. Get out there and get your body moving, whether it's a walk or whether it's, you know, you want to get on a rower or you want to ride a bike, whatever you want to do, but make it fun. And the reason we do that is that we see repeatedly in the clinical literature that moderate exercise, which is what I've just defined, is associated with bringing physiologic markers of immune inflammation back to normal. So the inflammatory cytokines go down. And blood sugars tend to regulate better, mood gets better, and so all these markers that we associate with aging actually go down when you moderately exercise, and when you exercise 2 and 3 hours a day. And by the way, when a pro athlete goes and exercises 2 or 3 hours a day, what do they do the rest of the day? They have a chef, they go get massage, they get acupuncture. Most of us trying to do that, we're working 12-hour days. We're doctors. We're lawyers. We're UPS people. We're out there working full days, and we're trying to compete in a triathlon, and we're not getting that equation into our head that, oh, my God, I'm already training like an athlete mentally in my job all day, and now I'm going to push my body to its brink, and they don't have appropriate nutrition. And that's why we see, really, there's these higher injury rates and incidences of cardiac death, because so many people are out there trying these things now.
Yeah, it's true. I think people are kind of in a vicious treadmill cycle, and of course, and then they erroneously, do the, caloric, Gatorade type products, the sports drinks. They do the carbo loading, and that's just you're chasing your tail. You know, you have to exercise more to burn off the calories, and you're taking in more calories to sustain the exercise. It's an exercise in futility, actually.
Exactly, but it's great for the exercise industry.
Yes, it is indeed, which is a multi-billion dollar industry in America. So I think you covered, a lot of ground here, a lot of the subjects that are important in relationship to diabetes. What's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Where can people get more information? First of all, your book, Cracking the Metabolic Code, is a good resource, correct?
It is a good resource, and they can go to jimlabelle.com. They can download a free carb counter. I mean, there's no advertisement to it. I don't have any magic pills to sell them. It's made by my dietitians. I've been on a national awareness program getting out on TV and radio to talk about diabetes. And so they can get a free How Do You Count Your Carbs if they just go to jimlabelle.com, and they can pull that PDF out of there, and that'll really help them out.
Okay, so it's, let's spell it, it's Laval, the way it sounds, it's L-A-V-A-L-L-E, with two L's.
Correct.
Okay, so Jim Laval, and with a capital L-A, capital V?
JimLaval.com. Yeah, okay. But in the, on the obviously how the web world goes, just...
It's not case sensitive.
JimLaval.com, yeah, the correct way is capital L, capital V.
By the way, who's that illustrious chef that was like a French chef? Was your
my father was Luigi Laval. He's a member of the Golden Toque. He ran major corporate sites, the big grand hotels and all that kind of stuff for years, and National Chef of the Year nominee twice. So he's quite an accomplished guy. Pretty proud
okay.
of him.
It's pretty remarkable that you escaped the ravages of diabetes with all that good food at home.
Hey, I used to have vats of chocolate mousse for my treats, man.
Oh, wow. And I just had to have, Eskimo pies.
Exactly.
from the truck that went around the block. Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us, Jim Laval. It's always a pleasure. You're brimming with ideas and concepts, and you have a great way of putting it across in understandable form. And that's what you'll find in the book, Breaking the Metabolic Code. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.